Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I talk, once again, about gun violence, and for the first time, about the bravery of one sexual assault survivor who came forward. Then, Naomi Ekperigin, Michaela Watkins, and Grace Parra join in studio to break down the difference between Hollywood's idea of a strong female character and what it actually means to be a strong female character. Then, as always, The Hills Will Die On. Before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to submit a Hill You'll Die On, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. If you want to submit a question for Dude You Asked, please send it to us at hysteria@crooked.com. You can also submit questions via Twitter and Instagram, and don't forget to check out the segment on IGTV on Crooked Media's Instagram. I want to give a shout out this week to everybody who listens who is a member of a union. We are a few days late from Labor Day, but unions are very important. I'm a member of a union and know a lot of people who are in unions. Go unions. Okay, now let's get to the show. Hello?
Hello?
Alyssa, is that you?
Tis me.
Thank goodness. I have a question to kick off our talk this morning.
Hit me. Yes.
Do you ever get deja vu?
Yes, I do.
Like, in what context do you get deja vu?
I have, like, these weird moments at, like, I can't believe I'm going to say this, at, like, the grocery store when I'm in the aisle and I'm like, I think I've been here before. But not like, of course, you go to the grocery store. It's almost like I had a premonition, You know what I mean, that I was going to be there. Or, like, a lot of times when I'm home, like, in where I grew up in Rhinebeck, I'll have, like, these weird sort of things. Like, I thought I was there before, even though, like, it always happens in places where I have been before, mm-hmm. but not doing that.
So it's just called having a memory.
No, don't take away my premonitions. I'm Marianne Williamson today.
No, you are Marianne. Use your thoughts to get rid of hurricanes. I don't know why people didn't think about that.
It's genius and it's working great.
Honestly, Alyssa, and I'm just saying this like as a white woman, I think that some white women are so empowered that they're like, am I magic?
She thinks she's magic. I feel like sometimes at Goop, they think they're magic.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's right? Like you are among a demographic that the entire patriarchy serves to protect. And you've taken that instead of concluding, wow, the system is fucked up and I have a lot of unearned privilege. They think, I'm magic. I'm magic. I'm going to think this hurricane away. Anyway, white women, as Naomi Ekperigin would say. I know. The reason that I brought up the deja vu thing is for something that is not fun. It's because I feel like I'm getting deja vu a lot of times when I read coverage of a specific type of news story. On Saturday, there was another mass shooting in Odessa, Texas. I feel like there was another mass shooting is something that is a sentence that's used way too often in America.
Like almost at this point, it should be in today's mass shooting news.
Yeah, exactly. There should be an entire section of the newspaper that is like just shootings or a gun section. Here's what happened with guns. There was like, it's like 5% of what happened with guns was like fun. There was a clay pigeon competition or whatever. And then the other 95% is like horrifying. So in Odessa, Texas, 21 people were injured and 7 people were killed by a man who just kind of drove around randomly killing people. This is less than a month after mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas that left dozens wounded and countless more with long-term physical and mental health effects that come with losing somebody in a mass shooting, being in close proximity to a mass shooting, and in other ways reckoning with gun violence. I think the kind of PTSD aspect of mass shootings is something that we as a culture haven't really fully even seen yet. Because there's a lot of people out there who are super traumatized by what's happening. So, Alyssa, I truly hate that there's a part of my brain. Like this morning when I was preparing for the show, I was like going through and trying to remember numbers of people killed in mass shootings. And I was like, I hate that this is how I'm using my brain. Like, how many people died? Where was it? What context? Who was the person that did it? I hate it so much.
You know, I have a good resource for you, so you don't have to remember.
What is it?
Have you ever followed gun deaths?
No.
I found it in doing research for our show today. Gun deaths is a nonpartisan, non-advocacy website, and I found it on Twitter, where it just gives you straight truth about how many people were killed, where, how, by who, ammunition, guns. I mean, it's depressing as fuck, but it is a very instructive and depressing resource.
Mm-hmm. It can be the part of my brain that would store this information so that I can get it out of my brain. Ugh, it's horrible.
It's horrible.
What we usually do in these situations, Alyssa, as somebody who's been in and around politics for a long time, is nothing. Usually what we do is just nothing. People tweet about it and then wait for it to calm down. But looks like Walmart is actually trying to do something. Alyssa, what do you make of what Walmart is trying to do?
So Walmart, you know, which has made it through Parkland and all these other shootings without doing anything other than, what was it, removing violent imagery from like video game displays in the store, came out yesterday. The CEO came out and was like, okay, you know, here's where we are. We, like, basically the CEO of Walmart said, we must do something. You hope that Mitch McConnell is listening, as the world's largest retailer. Walmart is the world's largest retailer, says we are no longer, and Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, we are no longer, they're no longer selling ammunition. Mm-hmm. And you can no longer open carry in their stores, even if it's legal where you live.
There's not selling specific types of ammunition. So there's short barrel rifle ammunition, which is used in AR style weapons. And they're not selling, they're requesting that customers no longer open carry firearms in the stores, even in states when it's okay to open carry. In the statement that the CEO, Doug McMillon, put online yesterday, I thought it was, you know how like when people release statements, there's always kind of like, there's a reason for the statement and you can kind of figure out the news behind the news. It's pretty obvious, the shootings in Odessa and El Paso and elsewhere. But then there was a part of the statement that was like, we understand some customers are well-intentioned and open carrying, but it's causing people fear. It's like, oh my God, are people carrying? Oh my God.
Yes. So wait, that segment of the statement is what sent me down a rabbit hole of research.
Okay.
Get this. According to gun deaths, since March of 2016, there have been 500 gun incidents at Walmart stores across the country that resulted in 32 deaths and 215 injuries.
Oh my Lord. Alyssa.
Right? Yes.
Oh, well, I mean, this is one of those situations where it's like, Doug McMillon did something, which is better than nothing, but it's not necessarily good in the face of everything that he could be doing.
Right.
But I did see that our pal, Ms. Watts, was commenting on how this was a victory. And I saw that our non-pals, the NRA, was commenting about how this was a loss. So I think that it is a move in a positive direction.
Well, I have more to add to that.
Okay.
Because, so you recall after Parkland that Dick's Sporting Goods stopped selling, you know, like assault rifles. Mm-hmm. And they had a period of time when sales did dip, but they didn't care. Well, they have actually banned all gun sales now at Dick's. And the second quarter of 2019 was their strongest quarter, I think, ever. And their stock spiked. So it's like there's really no downside for these companies to stop selling fucking guns.
Yeah, it seems like the downside is nearly infinite and the upside is tangible. Like, why choose like a tangible upside rather than like a potentially infinite downside instead of 500 incidents of gun violence on Walmart property, which is crazy. Ted Cruz was flapping his gums about gun violence. He tweeted a link on Monday to a Breitbart article. I know, I'm sorry. Flapping gums is like too evocative in reference to Ted Cruz. He looks like a gum flapper. He tweeted on Monday, gun control doesn't work. Look at Chicago, disarming law-abiding citizens isn't the answer. Blah, blah. I'm not going to continue quoting him. But the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, got involved. And she responded that 60% of illegal firearms in Chicago actually come from GOP-controlled states like Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin. And Lightfoot tweeted, also, keep our name out of your mouth.
There is nothing worse that someone could say to you. Like, I read that and I'm like, if someone told me to keep their name out of their mouth, I would go into the fetal position. Like, I would just be like, oh my God. I'm sure he didn't take it the way I would take it. But I mean,
yeah,
she made her point.
Ayanna Pressley recently deployed a keep my name out of your mouth. And that I could feel that. That was really devastating. That is a very devastating thing to say to somebody.
I mean,
Ivanka Trump has also kind of used Chicago as a talking point for gun violence. And, you know, that's not really an effective way to deal with it. As we've seen, like pointing fingers at cities like Chicago and saying that it is like cities' faults and cities are the ones that are in that are having the biggest problem. That's not correct. Here's what you can do about gun violence. Are you ready for this, Alyssa?
Do it. Hit me.
Okay. 93% of voters support requiring background checks for all gun buyers. That includes 89% of Republicans.
Feels like the will of the people.
Feels like a gimme. But here's the thing. How do the Republicans who represent those people feel? When the Senate comes back into session, Republicans could have a chance to vote on H.R. 8, which is a bill to expand background checks. So we want to know where Republicans stand on the measure. And we need your help, listeners, and your help, Alyssa, and my help. We can all do this. If you live in a state with a Republican senator, take a deep breath and get yourself nice and centered, and then call your senator and report back what you hear about where they stand on universal background checks and the NRA. Do you want me to give out the number?
Do it.
Okay. First, the Senate switchboard is 202-224-3121. Call that and ask for your senator. Say it politely, like you're calling a friend's house and you're in elementary school. Like, hello, Mrs. Morgan, may I speak to
Adam?
Yeah, exactly. You can practice in the mirror like you're five. When they pick up, give them your name and where you live. Hello, Mrs. Morgan. May I speak to Adam? My name is Aaron and I live in Los Angeles. Why do you want to talk to my son? Then politely ask the following. Does my senator support universal background checks? Why or why not? Would they be willing to support H.R. 8 if it were brought up for a vote? Has the senator ever taken money from the NRA? And then you can send us what they said in response by email or voice memo to hysteria@crooked.com, or you can tweet at us using the hashtag hysteria. So we know where.
Wait,
this
but Aaron, what? Are we going to read some out loud? Are we going to read the good ones?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Okay,
we
cool.
Get some good ones.
Cool.
And if they're like good enough, I mean, you know what? Virality is pretty democratic and you could go viral. So if you really want to target the root cause, just know we won't get any meaningful action on gun control until Mitch McConnell is gone or grows a conscience. So you can also donate to the Get Mitch or Die Trying Fund at votesaveamerica.com/donate, because honestly, unseating him is more likely than getting him to do anything.
Anything.
Anything at all. I wanted to transition really quick into another thing that's just kind of late breaking. Alyssa, do you remember the Stanford swimmer debacle?
Oh, you mean the guy who got no jail time? The judge was recalled because the sentence was so appalling and the woman they referred to as Emily Doe?
Yes, yes. So
yeah, I do.
Yeah. So you and I were texting back and forth about this morning. The woman who was known as Emily Doe was known that way because she was anonymous. She was a survivor of sexual assault. Her real name is Chanel Miller. And she just came out publicly because she's written a book. Alyssa, what do you think about this?
Good for her. You know, I went back when we were texting about it and I reread her entire 13-page victim statement. Everybody should. I think that when we get snippets of things in the news, we lose focus of what really happened to her and the trauma that she endured. And the fact that so many people talked about him as the victim, she was the victim. And I am so proud of her. You know, she said, I'm paraphrasing, but that like, she just couldn't be known as the girl they found naked behind the dumpster anymore, which mm-hmm. is how she was routinely referred to in the media.
Mm-hmm. And Brock Turner, who assaulted Ms. Miller, was 20 at the time. He was found guilty on 3 counts of a felony sexual assault, for which the maximum sentence is 14 years, but he got 6 months and only served 3.
In a county jail.
In the county jail. In the county jail. So it's exciting because Chanel Miller now has this book coming out about how she's trying to heal in the aftermath of what happened and how she refuses to just be anonymous. And I remember when her victim statement came out, and it was like just shockingly brave. And I remember I believe it was read in Congress.
Mm-hmm. I think it was.
Yeah, it was really, really brave and heartfelt. And it came in this moment of people kind of losing the humanity of people who were survivors of sexual assault. So it seems like very timely, and we're excited to read it.
And she's doing her first interview on 60 Minutes this weekend. And for all the time that I spend watching Donald Trump on television, I am definitely going to tune in to see what she has to say. We should all support her.
Yeah, I definitely support her. And I think that, you know, we're running out of time today, but I think that that is our toast. We want to toast Chanel Miller for being such a totem of strength and bravery. And we are standing with you.
We're with you, Chanel.
All right, Alyssa, thank you so much for calling in. We'll talk again next week.
All right, bye.
Bye. And we're back. We're at the part of the show where I gather a group of wonderful women to talk about things that we think about a lot. I want to introduce my panel before I get too far into it. First of all, back from a long hiatus, Grace Parra.
Hi.
How is everything?
Yay. Great. Hi, guys. I'm so glad to be here today. I'm writing on a new show on CBS, and it's been great and wonderful, and the hours have been, you know, good, but still, like,
Which one? I'm not here. I haven't been introduced yet.
Yeah. It's called, and Mikhail hasn't been introduced yet, but it's called Broke. It's a multicam starring Haina Camille and Natasha Leggero and Polly Perrette, and it premieres in January on CBS.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm very excited. Yeah. Yay. So we're in pre-production now, and I just turned in the outline for my episode, and I'll be off on script in the next few days, and I'm so excited. So it's been fantastic, and I can't wait to update you guys on it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
It's cool.
How are you doing managing your snacking?
Well, so I keep my in-room snacking to just gum and apples, but I keep my meals as heavy as possible so that get in all those nutrients, but not intermittent. Now, I do like the dark chocolate peanut butter cups from Trader Joe's, which they have bats of.
They have them in every one,
yeah,
every single
really
writer's
do.
Room.
They really do.
I think it's rude.
I think big peanut butter cup is in our pockets for sure.
Totally.
But
WGA,
I love them.
WGA and like big peanut butter cup have some kind of deal. Like, can't work unless there's a vat of them just waiting for you. That's like, have 4 of me after lunch. Have 4 or 5.
I also have been eating so many Honeycrisp apples that I think my teeth are sensitive now. Has this happened to anybody?
No.
Well, you eat so much fruit that your teeth
No, I've never eaten that much fruit.
I didn't think it was possible, but I'm eating like 2 a day now, and now my teeth are like just oochie ouchie. I don't know what it could be.
Are you biting too hard?
I might be grinding my teeth at night. I definitely am.
That's probably...
From all the anxiety of saying things like oochie ouchie on public platforms.
Okay, next up, we have writer, comedian, and host of the Couples Therapy Podcast. It's Naomi Ekperrigan.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm just still reeling from the idea of eating so much fruit that your teeth hurt. What is the opposite? I've had enough cheese that my stomach hurts. But that's about as close as I can get to that emotion. But I respect your journey.
You know, the cheese stomach hurting thing, I feel really hard.
Yeah.
I grew up in Wisconsin with the highest possible tolerance for cheese.
Right.
Like, optimal conditions, and I still eat so much cheese sometimes that my stomach hurts. And it's worth it.
Right? It's never, like, I never, like, even when I'm in the pain, I wouldn't do it differently. You know? And so it's all like, this is the price I'm paying. And I will pay on a daily basis.
Right. I paid, you know, $7 for this wedge of brie. And also I paid stomach pain.
Exactly.
And that's part of the cost of it.
I had a cheese stomach ache a week ago from Fresh Brothers. They don't sponsor me, but boy, did I love that pizza. I had not had a pie from Fresh Bros that I ordered online, not through an app, but online, because you can get it extra crispy. Like, in other words, they keep it in the oven for a little bit longer so that cheese is a little bit crispier.
Ooh.
And it's a game changer, y'all.
Oh my God. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Last but not least, we have actor, comedian, and generally a delightful person, Michaela Watkins.
Oh, Aaron.
Oh.
Aaron, that is the nicest thing you've ever said about anybody in your entire life.
That's true. That is true. The nicest thing. It's the nicest thing I've even thought about anybody.
Guys, I love a stew. I love a warm, mushy food. I love baby food. If I bit into an apple, half my teeth would probably fall out. I can't wait to be an old man.
It's almost stew weather. We're getting in.
It's 100 degrees. I have literally been sweating out all of my bodily fluids.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
We're going to get into stew weather. I want stew weather now.
I know.
I want stew weather.
I love how they're always like, fall fashion, and it's 150 degrees out. Back to school, turtleneck sweater.
Yeah, right. Yep, yep.
It's like kids playing in leaves. What leaves?
Yeah,
what
are you imagining? In flannels and leaves. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I always watched movies that took place in winter scenarios, and I thought, like, this is not how people dress in the winter, because it would be like, it's winter. We're wearing a sweater and a scarf and some, some gloves and like regular shoes.
Right.
And I remember being like, who is making this? And now that I'm in LA, it's like, oh, people in LA made those.
Yeah.
Movies. People who've lived there for so long that they're like, how do you dress?
You know what movie got it right, though? Have you seen With Honors?
No.
With Honors, starring Brendan Fraser and Moira Kelly.
It's about St. Bernard dog.
And it does have that vibe, though. It's about these, and Joe Pesci is in it. Joe Pesci plays this homeless dude.
That is the 90s
It's so 90s, but it's about these college kids, and Joe Pesci plays this homeless dude who lives in Cambridge. It's all like, it all takes place at Harvard. And they are the pastiest people, because it's like in the dead of winter where they're trying to finish their thesis, and they really get the pastiness right.
Oh,
they really
good.
Get the, like, the thick, chunky turtleneck sweaters, and also the pastiness is like dead on.
Conversely, in LA, they always, when we shoot here, and like, you know, they always think like, oh, California at night, everybody's in a tank top. It's like, no, we're not. We're freezing.
Yes, we are.
Maybe not now during this heat wave, but like normally you're hot, you sweat your balls off all day long, and then at night, you're freezing.
Yeah, you need a light jacket.
Yeah.
Always.
Always a light jacket.
Always.
Anyway, well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Food and weather. We tackled them.
Food and weather.
The controversial stuff.
Food and weather. The stuff that takes real strength. This week, we are going to talk about the subject of strength and strong female characters and what that means. And one of the things that I was reading and looking into on the way in today was the story of the woman who was who survived sexual assault at the hands of Brock Turner, the Stanford swimmer. Alyssa and I just got done talking about this, but I'm thinking about her. She came out. She's writing a book. Her name's Chanel Miller. And the amount of strength it took for her to get up on a witness stand and read a 13-page witness statement to him in the courtroom that went public and it went mega viral, and people, it really gave people some insight into what her experience was, even though that was like very vulnerable for her to do. I think Chanel Miller is such an example of what strength is. And conversely, I've been seeing a lot of, you know, in this post Me Too era, Hollywood trying to cash in on the idea of what a strong woman is. And it's so vastly different than what a real strong woman is. So let's explore the gap between those two things. Grace, I'm going to start with you, since it's been a while since we've chatted.
Yeah.
How would you define what it means to be strong in a real sense versus what it means to be strong in a Hollywood sense?
I think that strength is something that can't be vocalized. And the moment that you talk about how strong you are, it's almost like when people are like, I'm really talented.
Or classy.
Really classy. I'm really pretty. I'm really strong. It's like, you're kind of not.
I'm really chill.
I'm really, yeah.
That is.
That's exactly, yeah. It's dead on. It is something that you cannot buy. It's something that you have to earn. It only comes from experience. And along those lines, I had a conversation with a friend this weekend whose brother is dating a woman who's younger, is like 26. sucks. And the best way to describe her is that she's a life virgin. So this girl lived with her parents up until recently, where she moved in with her boyfriend. So imagine living with your parents till you're 26, having everything taken care of, never having to pay a bill, never having, you know, the duress of living life and having to take care of yourself, and then moving in with a man who then does all that for you. Mm. And he was talking about the strain in the relationship because this woman is a life virgin and doesn't have experience. And I was trying to pinpoint exactly what it was that that I think she lacked. And I think it's strength. I think it's when you don't have any sort of duress coming your way and any sort of negative experiences. Not to say that like everybody should go seek out shit to happen in their lives, but it is only through those negative experiences that you gain strength. So if you're 26 and you've always had somebody taking care of everything for you, you probably don't have the life experience to have strength, and strength in turn gives dimension to one's character.
Mm-hmm. Naomi, anything to add?
To me, I've always thought that like strength is about like it is an inner core that is unshakable regardless of what is happening in your external world. The ability to say, this is who I am, I stand by it, or I apologize for it. You know, the ability to, without feeling like in doing so, you know, you're not trying to people please, you're not afraid, you're not, you know, running from something. Because I think that for so many people, regardless of gender, even though I do talk about it more with women, so many of our things, it's never an isolated incident. It's always like an indictment of our character. You know what I mean? Like it's meaning the core is so shakable. Whatever you're kind of feeling is like, you know, I am bad versus I did a bad thing, you know, or made a mistake, period. And to me, a big part of strength is being able to say like, you know, I am okay regardless of what is kind of going on around me or regardless of what someone else is saying about me. And not being afraid to be a little messy, whereas I feel like, I don't know, you're talking about like Hollywood. Hollywood's idea of strength is like, are you a size 6 and you took your top off? You're brave. Or do you have a superpower? There's no in between of just being a regular person. It's like, can you move a mountain with your eyeballs? That's a strong female character.
I won't be slut shamed for showing you my magnificent breasts that now everyone else is going to feel pressured to have their breasts look like. I won't be slut shamed for that.
It just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the thing is, Hollywood is made by people, which we all know were some of the people that helped make it. And some of the people behind stuff have like really good intentions and have pretty good outcomes where there's characters. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a legitimately strong woman. I'm watching a strong person on screen. And then there are times where I'm just like, OK, so she's at a bar and a guy catcalls her. So she karate chops him and beats him up. And then the song I'm Woman, Hear Me Roar, but like punk starts playing. Like, OK, I'm out. you lost me. Like, that's so pandery. I don't know. Michaela, what is your concept of the difference between Hollywood strong and real strong?
You know, I think when I hear people say, like, if they're you're being pitched about a strong female character, I always think it's just shorthand for we actually wrote a character. so, like, that's the you know, asterisk of strong. So you'll like this. There's a strong female character. It's like, oh, why did you give her a point of view? She's not just a body with a mouth, you know, and like, you know, that it's funny. My nephew and I do what's called dinner in a Marvel because I've not watched zero of the Marvel movies and he's watched them all and put them in chronological order from, you know, not when they were shot, but the order.
In the story.
In the story.
Aww, the universe.
I love that.
Yeah, the universe.
Yeah. So we kicked off last night with the first Captain America, you know, and I just was like, oh, this is a strong, like this femme fatale, strong woman. You know, I was thinking about the what that is. And it's like, you know, there's so many different definitions of strong, right? For some people, strength is admitting you're wrong, you know? It's, for some people, that's a really impossible thing. They dig in so hard that it's really the hardest thing in the world to be like, you know what? You're right. I'm wrong. For others, it's the opposite, you know? It's admitting that you're right. So for some people, it is so impossible to take. And so I think strength looks so different on every single woman. And so when I think of a strong female character, I have to tell you this. I was reading a script recently, and I took pictures of the way that the women were introduced?
Oh, yes, I remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you put this in your story on Insta? Or
I think I probably did, but they're just four quick ones. Yeah. But this is before I threw the script across the room. But I got so excited because I was like asked to read the lead. And the person who wrote this, I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to shame them that hard, but they do teach writing. And I feel like I need to backdoor shame them.
Oh, which is
to, at a university in the mid part, the heartland part of our country.
Oh, dear.
So this is the first one. Charlie's daughter, Anna, 13, walks into the room. Anna is pretty and conservative looking. Okay, well, that's Anna.
Yep, 13 pretty.
Oh, yeah. She's pretty. She's on film.
And
conservative looking.
Here's the next woman that gets introduced. He's looking at a profile photo for Splatterer. This is a, I don't know, porn site or something. She's a pretty brunette with a smile that hints at a woman full of life.
Amazing.
I just want everybody to know that's a very playable action.
Hints.
I can
the
do
director. Can you be like, a little more hinting at
a woman
full of life?
Yeah. I think the more challenging thing would be to hint that you had no light behind your eyes. Like the kind of empty grimace.
Yeah. Exactly. Have a smile that hints that
the Ivanka stare.
That you forgot to take your top off at Mardi Gras that one time. His ex-wife, Deborah, 45, comes outside. She's extremely pretty. But her hair and outfits make her seem very uptight, which she is. Okay. And here's the last one. This is the part that I was going to, this is the one that really put me over the edge. And I was like, I need a Xanax and I need to never look at this again. We are looking through a bar window from the sidewalk. Inside, we see Lisa Williams. This is the strong character, just so you guys are aware.
Your strong character.
Okay.
She gets a last name.
She gets Lisa Williams, 43. She's 43, sipping a drink. She is quirky. Stylish. I just want to, this needs to come with a trigger warning. In a sleeveless black dress that most women her age could not pull off.
I felt my uterus drop.
She's 43, you guys. She's 43, and she deigned to wear.
Dared to show her sleeves. Dared to show her arms.
Yeah.
How could she?
When you talk about strength, that's what I'm getting at.
That's why we're here.
This is why we're
she's
here.
Bearing
shoulders.
She's brave. How dare she?
I mean, that is bravery.
Lisa Williams,
strength.
2020.
What? Like, she woke up and was like, I can do this? Most women my age could never.
You know, honestly, that's cocky. That's not strength. That's cockiness.
Yeah. And that's not, I don't,
that's as a little off
from my man just like, gaze, I don't like that.
Did something terrible befall her or did you, like, now I want to know how these women then go on to live in the world of whatever, of this project. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I think they freeze in place until a man enters the room and then they animate and they're like,
right.
And then does a man yell at them or do they yell at the man? You see what I'm saying? Because that seems to be the dynamic. Those are the two options.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like male writers need to understand everywhere. And I've said this before. If you have like a big broad comedy, Zach Galifianakis is your lead man, mm-hmm. and you've got like Adam Sandler, whatever your dream cast is, and then you've got your lead female. And what happens so many times is when I read the female lead in these comedies, I'm like, this is 20% as funny as the male leads. Like, if you would be embarrassed to ask Zach Galifianakis to do your female lead part, you haven't written it well enough. So mm-hmm. you have to go back and hit it again. And the thing is that these female, like, guys need to understand this. Female women, we don't walk around the world only crossing our arm and having a judgment about men. We have other things that we actually think about and that occupy our brain space. Mm-hmm. So crossing our arms and looking
at a
man.
Like, can we bare our shoulders? That's the kind of stuff that I'm thinking about.
I mean, if you're 42, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a really good point, Michaela, that a lot of male screenwriters can't understand a woman beyond what a woman thinks of them mm-hmm. and a woman talking about them and a woman like having their world revolve around them, because their only really complicated idea of a woman or the woman that they've known the best and the woman that they've loved the most is their mommy. Mm-hmm. And so they imagine that every single woman loves them like how they're or thinks about them like how their mommy thinks of them.
Mm-hmm. And in fairness, when I was in eighth grade, all I did think about was them. That's it. I had nothing else on my mind except what Jason said that day in gym class and what he said afterwards.
Your like childhood diary fails the Bechdel test.
Oh my God. My diary.
No, mine does too, actually, to think of it, for sure.
Mine would spontaneously burst into Bechdel flames. But that's... Guys,
you know the one exception that we're seeing that I think is being overdone now? Have you guys seen the movie The Long Shot with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen? Mm-hmm. So when you do have a kind of co-led movie by
a two-hander, as we call it in the biz,
which sounds very sexual.
It does.
When you do have a two-hander and you're writing a strong female character, that female has to be a politician, has to be running for president. That's the only example of a woman who can, like, if you're going to exude strength or power, they have to actually be a person of power in their profession.
Monkey brain can go like, that,
exactly, exactly.
I mean, I think one exception to that is, I was racking my brain for women that were on film that I was like, this was a really strong woman. And I think the lead in Roma is a good example. Yes. Of like a strong woman.
Beautiful.
And
example.
They come around to her strength in a way that is very like nuanced and well, like she's very full of life, but she endures things that are these kind of private tragedies that a lot of women endure in their lives, like losing a child, you know, having a man be very disrespectful toward her. And she endures them and is like so strong and
gracious.
Such a pillar of the community.
That's a great example. I just got back from Telluride Film Festival, and I know not all our listeners give a shit about like film and television, but I just want to say that I couldn't get into my first choice film and got into this other film by this Filipino 25-year-old male director who took you through 2 hours of a woman who was beaten by her husband and the court, like how the court proceedings would work in this like small city in the Philippines. And it was mesmerizing, but a perfect example. Like this woman is, you know, it's just makes soap and she's going up against a system that is so overwhelmed to get her husband behind bars because he's beating her and her daughter. And I was just like, it was infuriating, but that's such a great example of, and all these young male directors, they're actually, I shouldn't poo-poo men and directors because there were a lot of young, incredible directors that were telling female stories in a nuanced way.
That's great. Here's a question, something I always think, because I feel like, you know, especially in portrayals of women, can you have a strong woman and not have pain? Because I find, for instance, like with Black women in movies and like their leads in the story, you know, it's like we're all, it's like either a slave narrative or like my kids were stolen, I've been, you know, beaten. Like, and at least for me, in terms of seeing a representation of my like culture and community, I'm like a little tired of like the darkness of it. Mm-hmm. Not to say that it's not, you know, accurate at times, but just also in terms of like, I guess thinking about like, what are the stories that get made and what can people latch on to? Mm-hmm. And I find it a little frustrating that people can seem to only latch on to like a Black woman or a woman of any color on Struggle Street.
Yeah.
You know, you got to tell that one.
Well, but, I think that goes back to kind of what Grace is saying. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but she was saying that like what brings strength is people going through some kind of trial. And I think maybe the only trials that people are recognizing that a Black woman would go through is like what we know from history books.
But is there a way, but is there also, to me, I think there is something about, there is a strength in, I think, happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. Not one that like denies reality, but you know, in a world that says women can only be a certain way, there is something, like, think about like Bridesmaids, for instance. Like we loved seeing that crew of women.
Yeah.
Like have fucking fun together.
Wine country.
As you were talking, I was just thinking of Lizzo. Lizzo's performance at the MTV VMAs.
That big butt.
Joyful.
Joyful. Yeah.
Pure, unadulterated joy and also strength, not necessarily within the presence of pain. It was just kind of like, here I am. Yeah. Here's my body. Here's my voice. Here's how I feel. Here's all my dancers. We're taking her hair off. Here's a big butt balloon, which was so fun.
The butt balloon was awesome, man.
The butt balloon was awesome.
That would be the next bouncy castle at every child's birthday party.
I kind of want to have that at my wedding.
For sure.
A big butt balloon.
Yeah. I hope she trademarks that balloon. It's very cool.
It's really cool. Okay, so Michaela, you touched on the idea of strength sometimes being changing your mind and sometimes being in keeping your mind the same way that it was. Can you think of examples of times that you've changed your mind and you've looked back and you've been like, that was an act of strength or that was an act of weakness?
Oh, I mean, God, more countless times. I mean, the very first time that I remember actively taking a stand and realizing, I always felt like I was not a normal kid. I always felt that people were going to find out that my house was chaos. I really wanted to present well because I have a mom who was like always so concerned about what the neighbors might think. As she's gotten older, that's totally gone out the window. And now I'm worried about what our neighbors think about my mom. But
you're becoming your mom. You're the one that's worried.
Aren't we all?
Your mom has passed the torch to you.
Oh, yes. We're all becoming our moms. But I remember I went to summer camp and there was this girl. And she would have been such an easy, like, summer camp target. You know what I mean? There was something about her where she, I can't probably articulate what it is, but the really cool, popular girls from the year before had gotten there early, and I arrived, and then this other girl had arrived. And so now it was the two popular girls and me, and then this other person. And when she walked out of the room, they kind of, you know, their lips snarled and they were ready to just lambast her and talk shit about her. And I said, oh, I think she's actually really, really nice. And I realized how it totally took the teeth out of everything in the room. Mm-hmm. And these two snarky, shitty girls that I was so afraid of the year before were so alone in their judgment. And they just, the two of them just hung out together the whole summer. And I had the best summer of my life.
Oh, yes.
And I just remember being like, oh, that was my first taste of standing up for the little guy.
Uh-huh.
Because I always felt like I was the little guy. And I realized, like, there's so much strength in little guy numbers. And then that kind of became my anthem in life.
Yeah,
I love
That's
that.
That's really interesting because a lot of strength right now seems to be represented in culture and in politics as the person who finds the little person and beats the fuck out of them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what strength looks like to a Donald Trump type figure.
I think strength can also be, tell me if you guys think this is strong, because I think that strength can also be not saying something and can also be in the silence.
Right.
So I don't spend, I'm really, I do not spend a lot of time on Instagram anymore, and I'm really happy about it. It's been great for my life in general. I highly recommend it. But I was on a few days ago, and I was just scrolling through some shit, and I found this picture of this girl that I know, and it was just, you know, it's just like a string of just like sexy pics. Like, here I am in my bikini, and I'm just so attractive, and whatever. And I had the impulse to text a mutual friend and be like, oh my God, I haven't been on Instagram in days, and this is what I see. And I didn't fucking do it. And I feel like that took strength. I thought it. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably a worse person for having thought that, and definitely a bad person for talking about it on a podcast. But I didn't, in the moment, I was like, no, Grace, because then you're just perpetuating gossip. Mm-hmm. Then you're the person who's instigating these kinds of conversations. Just, you can have the thought. It's fine. We all do. But don't do anything with that thought. Mm-hmm. And so in not saying something, I felt like there's a little bit of exhibiting strength.
Yeah. It's like the Mike Birbiglia quote, what I should have said was nothing.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is like the case. What I should have said was nothing. Naomi, do you have a moment that you remember, like from your formative years of being a moment that you stood up or a moment that you were like, I'm backing off?
Oh, I should have come prepared with a tidbit, but I didn't have one. It's funny. I've actually been like dealing with it the last week or so. I'm not answering your question, but I'll tell you where I'm at because it does dovetail.
Good.
Because I was talking to my mom last week and we were having a chat and she was just like, you know, how are you liking this business that you're in? Because I think it was very, even though I've always been creative, the idea of actually making it a job, like, I think none of us saw coming. And so she was just kind of whatever. And I was like, yeah, I was like, it's fine. You know, like, I'm like, whatever. But then she goes, she's like, well, that's good because, you know, you've always seemed a little weak to me. And I just don't, you know, and I just worry about you and whether this is going to be the thing. And it's been ringing in my ears since then. And sort of, I guess, to answer, you know, and the reason why, obviously, we're talking about strength, weakness, but then also thinking back where I'm like, she says that. And I kind of like look back kind of real quick life Rolodex. And I'm like, the thing is, I've always been a very sensitive child. Like, I am quick to cry. Oh, loved it then, love it now. You know, but I don't know. Like, I was always I was afraid of stuff. I was afraid of people. I was afraid of new situations. But I never really, like, it took me a while. Like, when you say formative years, I feel like the idea of, like, standing up or saying, this is who I am, kind of, and we're and I'm not going to change it for you. It took way longer. It took way longer. I definitely spent, I was not, you know, joining bullies or anything like that. I just separated myself. Mm-hmm. Like I was like in the corner reading a book. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I don't even know how to begin with this situation.
Do you think though that your childhood of being like sensitive and very like aware of like pain and easily hurt and stuff is now sort of a strength for you because you're a person who's a writer and like a you're like a professional observer, like a professional observer and like crystallizer and like feeding it back to people in a way that's funny. And in order to do that, you have to have, you have to be like deeply sensitive to what's gone on around you. So do you think looking back that that's something that is a strength for you now?
I think so. I think it's a strength in the doing of the work, right? Itself, like creating things and, you know, being able to do that. But I think everything else around it, that's where it kind of fucks me up. Mm-hmm. Because it's still, you know, I'm in this position where gatekeepers are still calling the shots and deciding. Yeah. And then I'm like, and that I haven't learned to kind of fortify myself against.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I haven't figured that out. And I must soon. I must soon for sanity. For sanity.
I mean, I think that that's, it's hard to be somebody who tries to be creative or put yourself out there in any way, whether you're in entertainment or any other field where you're putting yourself into your work. Because then when your work is rejected, even if it's for reasons that are apart from the actual quality of what you're doing, you have to have the strength to understand that even though you put yourself into it, it's not yourself that is getting rejected. Mm-hmm. So you almost have to have like an emotion. You have to be deeply emotionally disturbed in order to compartmentalize enough that you're like, I'm putting myself out there. And they're like, we don't want that. You're like, that wasn't me that I put out there. I'm fine. I've always been fine. That's like, it's a hard thing to deal with. And I was just thinking about the idea of like standing up for yourself. And Naomi, as you were talking about like weaponizing your, you know, intellect or whatever. I remember being in high school, maybe my senior year, and I was always kind of a like under the breath wisecracker, but I was usually like I was well behaved and never went to the principal's office except because the principal wanted to read the college recommendation letter he wrote for me out loud to me to get my approval before he sent it.
Wow.
Yeah, I was that kind of a kid. But, you know, but I do remember my senior year, there was a couple girls that were a little younger than me who I fell in with who thought it was funny when I said the like kind of quiet wisecracks like loud. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they could be a little bit mean. I never was like a bully. I never ever targeted somebody that I thought was weak, but I would always aim my like cunty comments mm-hmm. at like
you punched up.
Like idiots mm-hmm. who I thought kind of had it coming. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know if it's necessarily the best look. I have kind of made a career of it, but sometimes I think back on like the way that a person's strengthened like intellect can be used, and I'm not sure that that's like the best possible way to do it.
You know, I was at a dinner recently and a very, very high powery exec said to me, she'd had a couple, it was very sweet. She just said, can I ask you a honest question? And, you know, it was kind of a personal question. And I said, go ahead. And she goes, why do you, like, she was referring to Twitter and social networks and my political activism. You personally need to state your opinion to the world.
Wow.
Like, why do you think that is something you have to do? And the right answer was like, why do you think you, why aren't you? You
know what I mean? Yes, yes.
But the answer I said is, I said, okay, here's my answer right now, which is, you know, truthfully, when you grow up learning about the Holocaust and you see it again and everybody always says, what would you have done if you were around during Hitler? Like, I guess I'm finding out what I would have done, which is, you know, I'm speaking out against it. And if me speaking out against it allows somebody else who's afraid to use their voice as well, you know, I dig her. And if she's doing it or I don't dig her, I think she's kind of piss weak. But she, if she's doing it, you know, whatever yeah. it is, then surely I can, too. And I said, I think that when you learn about how terrible things happen in history, it's because not enough people said no early enough, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an op-ed recently for my local paper in Syracuse, where I grew up, Syracuse, New York. And it was calling out the congressman there, who I obviously didn't vote for because I don't live there. But I was saying how I felt like he was a real stain on the city because he voted against the resolution to condemn Trump's racist remarks, and calling it just like political theater and things like that. And then, of course, a week later, two mass shootings happened sort of, you know, adjacent to his comments, right? So but before the mass shootings, I had written this op-ed calling it out. And the vitriol and the rancor that I received back was so overwhelming. But at the same time, I found out my strength because I knew I was right. And nobody was defending Katko's position. They were just instead assailing and attacking my character. Jeez. And I felt so strong in that moment because I was like, I know I'm right. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is where I want to stand in the face of history. And you can say anything you want to me. I have no problem defending, you know, those that are being attacked right now. Mm-hmm. And you're the ones that look stupid.
Was it all via social media? Like people reaching out and just giving you?
No, it was like comments in the paper, you know?
Oh my God.
I mean, they posted online and then then they published it in the paper. And then the head of the Republican, the county commissioner of the Republican Party wrote a retort and, you know, again, assailed my character instead, not knowing me. And he made one good point. What have you done for Syracuse? You know? And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
Been cool.
Yeah.
Unlike him.
I don't know.
Been not a stain on the city.
But if you know, the city's going to write articles like local gal, you know, does this or that. I'm like, well, here's what the local gal thinks of the local.
Good for them for publishing you. But also, oof, woof, I'm sorry to go through that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good segue into kind of what strength means in this current political moment. Grace, you've done some like activism and stuff. What does strength look like to you? And when do you take a break and regroup?
I think that it's the point at which you feel overwhelmed with vocalizing your opinions that it's okay to allow yourself to take a break. I agree with Michaela that things need to be said. And I think everybody who feels like they are on the right side of history has a platform. And, you know, that platform might just be freetwitter.com, but that's an opportunity for you to speak your mind and do it by all means. But I do think that we're reaching a point of saturation. And I mean individual saturation. I don't care about how much individuals are consuming. Obviously, like you have to, you know, put stopping points on those in your own daily life. But I think that as far as those of us who are active out in the world and social media, it becomes overwhelming at some point. And I don't know that I anticipated that at any point or early on, especially like in the early days of like Facebook or whatever. It's just kind of fun and it's kind of an addition to your daily life. But now it's kind of overtaken how we spend our hours. It's very quick to get caught up in that maelstrom. And I think that there's some strength, again, in like not saying the thing, but in understanding your limits to be able to say what you want and also pull back to live a life outside of social media. Mm-hmm. I know that that's very vague and very broad, but I've seen a lot of people do it. I mean, I feel like I'm going through this withdrawal in many ways of social media as well. I don't spend as much time doing it, and it's been awesome. It has been awesome. And that's not to say that I'm less active or less interested in vocalizing my point, but I have to do it for my own sanity. I have to do it for my own mental health. What that allows me to do in turn, I think, is to spend more time sitting in my thoughts and ideas. Like, I don't know necessarily what's going to become of those ideas, but it might be that it's, you know, not a tweet that I send out or not a retort that I send out, but maybe like, you know, a script that's written in a year, or it may be like a lyrical dance that I create in 5 years. I've never
I've
promised an interpretive dance to the theme song for the New York Times podcast for quite
the
some
daily,
time.
The daily, it's true. I promised this early on. Aaron was like, you can be on this podcast, but I need that dance.
I need the dance. I need the dance. You know, I don't like to put due dates on things, but like, because I'm like a cool boss, but I need the dance. I think like, you know, when you talk about political activism, I've never canvassed before. I have like phone banked, but I've never canvassed before. And I think that the strength that it takes to canvass is like a really good example of like the sort of thing that we need. It's like the strength to go up to somebody and be like, hey, who are you going to vote for? I'm just here reminding you that, you know, Katie Hill's cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know, vote for Katie Porter or, you know, whatever region of the country you're in.
And can I also add to that, seeking out the not the more under the radar ways to speak out, like Michaela, that story of you going to your hometown newspaper and writing for them is awesome. It's not just like I'm on medium.com or whatever, this kind of generic thing. Or it's not just like I'm donating to the ACLU, which everybody should, of course. But like those traditional paths, like I found this organization, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, which I'm so excited to start working for. And I've had a couple conversations with them in the past few weeks. And I don't know exactly in what way that's going to manifest itself. But that's an organization that took me a little bit of time to find, that wasn't presented to me, and that I don't think a lot of people know about yet. So I think that's also a form of strength. It's like you have to put in the work to find an organization or to find an outlet, to find a platform that not everybody else knows about that you might be able to shed some light on. Mm-hmm. Not just because it's like, oh, I listen to this band that nobody else does, that makes me cool, but because it takes a little bit more effort. It takes a little bit more time too, mm-hmm. to do that.
Well, yeah. To just have conversations, you know, the work of having conversations with people who do not agree with you, and being able to have that conversation calmly. To mm-hmm. me, the strength is kind of like the response, yes. you know, kind of off what you're saying, Grace, about like not the silence or not saying something, but also being able to take somebody's heat, their feeling. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said with your story, yeah, with the op-ed you wrote where you were like, no, I know I'm right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, bring it on. Mm-hmm. I can stand in all your bullshit because I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully, depending, because some people just want to fight for real. Mm-hmm. And there are other people who, you know, when you can be a little cool and calm, mm-hmm. you can actually start to have a conversation mm-hmm. and kind of unpack, you know, why do you feel like this is the only president we should be having right now? You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. kind of get underneath. Now, does that mean like one conversation is going to change how someone votes? But it may change the way they view other people in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Especially like going out and doing stand-up and doing stuff. And, you know, I can tell when, you know, when audiences are like, I'm not used to hearing a black lady comedian mm-hmm. or a black lady talk to me this long. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Or like I could tell when it's like I had somebody at the show where he was like, I'm so excited for the show. And like, it was like in his like Twitter bio, it was like recovering racist or something where like he had grown up like in a mm-hmm. place where it was like, everybody was racist and that's how we were mm-hmm. like whatever. And how like he's obviously moved past that, but like how it was, you know, at least the impression I got a little bit was, you know, how hearing different comedians and hearing different things kind of opened him up to different people and like the joke and like, you know, and not everyone's going to be that way, but it's like there is something to be said for being able to talk and engage and do this stuff either with some chillness or with some levity that can open people up to hear the hard part, mm-hmm. you know?
They mm-hmm. hear the human
yeah.
and not the talking points.
Right.
Yeah. Putting yourself out to, as a creator and as a performer yourself also, putting yourself out to audiences that might not be so open, that might not be the kind of traditional audiences that you've heard as well. Or that you speak to as well, I think is a form of strength too, you know, because it's like you as a creator and as a performer knowingly go into situations where you're like, I don't know how this is going to be taken, but let's do it anyway, yeah. rather than, you know, like this goes back to the argument that I think a lot of people are having, stand up saying like, I'm not going to be talking in front of college campuses anymore. I'm not going to do it. Everybody's too sensitive. That's weakness, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's weakness. I mean, I understand the argument there, but I also think that it takes strength to be like, you know what? I might not get the kind of response that I'm looking for, the kind of accolades that I want, that I'm accustomed to, but I'm going to do it anyway because what I'm saying I think is important, and the act of me doing this is an art that I love.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the most dramatic act of strength is just the strength to be yourself and mm-hmm. understand that people aren't going to like it and be like, mm-hmm. I'm going into a place where people aren't going to like me, but I'm like Naomi, you were saying earlier, like I know who I am and the reaction to me doesn't affect who I am as a person. That's all the time we have because we have to get to The Hills We'll Die On.
We'll definitely
die.
We do need a theme song for Hills.
I'm shocked that you and Gailey haven't made up a theme song yet.
Okay, well, it's going to happen now.
Kieran kind of like also harmonizing.
Yeah, we're going
to
do that.
We got to do a Hills Will Die On theme song. We have to take a break. We'll definitely revisit this topic because I think there's a lot to get into.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We're at the part of the show where we have really strong opinions about things that aren't really that important. It's The Hills We'll Die On. Let's get started with our listener hill.
Hi, I'm Ivy, and my hill is that every bathroom should have a hook for your bag. Mm-hmm. Especially a porta potty or an outhouse. Oh, that nasty ass floor is not getting my fancy purse put down on it. Because if I'm at an event where there's porta potties lined up, I'm not putting my bag down. So what are you going to do? Every bathroom should have a hook for your bag. I am dying on that hill forever.
Yeah. I mean, Audrey, I'm not
weary. It's broken her. This is broken her.
Do it for Ivy, guys.
Oh, she is weary. But you know what?
Here's she's on day 17 of a hunger strike.
Yeah, she's like, they at Stagecoach, they better have hooks on the thing. One way to get around that is if you anticipate that you'll be in a dirty bathroom situation, it's a mini backpack. You can just wear it on your front when you sit on them.
Oh, that's smart. Or a fanny pack.
Fanny pack's too close to the fanny action.
That's true. You got to hike it up over the boob.
Yeah, so you want to keep that.
Yeah.
You want to keep those things away from each other. Okay, here's the hill I'll die on this week. Mm. It is by accident, not on accident.
Oh, okay, yes.
By accident.
Yes.
I've heard powerful people who absolutely should know better saying that they did something on accident.
What is it? Is it a regional thing?
Yeah,
that's what I wondered. Is it like, because I'm like, what? Where's on accident?
Yeah.
You could also say accidentally.
Yeah.
I did that. Also works.
I accidentally forgot.
I think it probably is derivative from on purpose. On accident.
You're right.
Sure.
Still sick.
Still wrong. Incorrect. It is by accident, not on accident. And if you ever use on accident around me, I will by accident walk away from you. That's the hill I'll die on this week.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Let's see. Naomi, do you want to go?
Okay. You know I'm livid. I told Aaron, I was like, Aaron, I already have my hill because I just been stewing.
You told me this last week.
Yeah, literally, livid. Okay, we all know about the young woman who is doing a hunger strike outside of the Netflix office for the OA not being renewed. Now, I won't say what white nonsense is this. I won't say it. What I'm going to say is we got to let go of the, like, saving shows and feeling like if a show doesn't go on anymore, like, with everything going on in the world, you stressing over AP Bio? Okay, no, look, good program, everybody thriving. Don't get me wrong. My point being, though, that, like, we can't have all the shows. You don't think I want to know whatever happened with Angela Chase and Jordan Catalano? You don't think I needed two more seasons of Ricky finding himself on my so-called life? Yeah, I wanted that shit.
Yeah.
But I didn't get it. And you know what? I'm going to be okay. And the fact that we out here losing our minds every time a show get canceled. And I get it, like, when you're the creator, you know what I mean? Like, then they kind of post and they're like, jobs, my livelihood. Mm-hmm. But, like, homegirl sitting at home who just said, oh, I ain't going to eat. When I saw her ass, she was on day 10. I don't know if she's still out there, but I was livid. And I need us to just stop and say, you know what? Write some fan fiction if you need it to go on. It's not happening anymore, and you will be okay. I'm done.
That is a perfect example of, like, Mike Birbiglia's quote about sometimes, because I saw that too, and
I miss this.
So mad, and I was like, well, I've never actually seen the OA. Would I feel this way if I had?
What, like, does OA stand for? Outfield Angels? What is it?
Did you just pick two random,
like,
words?
The movie Angels in the Outfield. You inverted the outfield.
Ocean
Angels.
Appetizer. Is that what it stands
for? I don't know. I mean, some woman's starving herself, and I don't know what it's about.
And even though in real life it's like Overeaters Anonymous, and so the fact that she's starving herself, even though that's not what the show is about.
It's not.
The show is not that, but, like, there's a group. So it's like layers where I'm like, okay, what are you doing? OA, you're not eating. I'm stressed out. The show is probably fine. Maybe great.
Yeah.
That's not the point, though, right? It's not about the value of the program, because a lot of good programs leave us and a lot of bad programs stay.
Mm-hmm. Octagon asparagus.
That's it.
That's it.
That's what it's about.
It's about octagon asparagus.
It is. It's when you try to make it look like you ate more asparagus than you did by putting in the shape of an octagon. And you go, I'm full. I couldn't possibly have any more.
There's just steaks in that show. Some characters for days.
Okay. Grace, you're in the middle of a drink, but I'm going
to... You know what? Mine's very simple because I need to just applaud Naomi for that. It was perfect. And
Thank
I really
you.
Agree.
It's just
I really
that
agree.
Runs me. That's very kind. Mm-hmm.
Mine is simple. I've decided that the hill I'm going to die on is people shit on it, but cleaning out your ears with Q-tips mm-hmm. is one of the top three most satisfying things you can do with your body.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's number one.
I did not know where it was going. I didn't know you were going.
I loved that. I mean, that is a show I would starve myself to renew.
I'm not saying it's number one.
Yeah, if they discontinued Q-tips, I would be like, oh. I'm not eating until they're back. It is. I heartily agree.
I know. Okay, maybe one person burst their eardrum, whatever, because they got a little OA. That's fine. I get it. I like it. Yeah. It feels good. It's satisfying. You look at that Q-tip and you're like, thank God I did that.
I know.
What was in there?
But
days?
I always think that I'm like simultaneously shoving more wax deep into like the little hole that it came out of.
You gotta have some tender graciousness with the Q-tip. You gotta just there's an art to it.
And if you
kiss
notice
the wax.
I'm also yes. You gotta massage. I'm also massaging the Q-tip with my.
Wow.
It's very
Grace is
delicate.
Making a rolling motion with her fingers
I'm making
to indicate
roll.
The motion.
She's
the
drawing
Q-tip.
It out correct. Like a wax whisperer.
Correct. Correct.
Wow. Okay. We got deep into Grace's ears on that
I've
one.
Got great ear health, guys.
I'm sure you do. Michaela, do you want to bring us home?
Okay. My hill is this. When you get in the car and you plug in your iPhone and the decibel level of that song that starts with an A goes up to 150. It used to be A, B, C, it's easy as well, you know, because that was the first song. I had to delete it off my phone because I was going to blow my brains out. And so now it's, I'm absolute beginners, which I was like, Bowie, I can handle you. We're going to do this. But I know Apple. Is there an Apple song that they just want to play? It starts with A that is just so easy on the ears so that when you get in your car, they have the ability to not make me listen to the first song on my iTunes.
There is some sort of thing where you can like download a track that's mm-hmm. just literally like A, and it's like silent for 2 minutes until you can kind of figure out what you want to do. Do you know what I mean? So it's basically like you're playing like silence
like,
on your phone. So
it's like room
play,
tone, basically
so that you're not coming into like whatever song.
What if there
song?
Was like one that was like, A affirmations, and you get in the car and you're like, you are so wonderful.
Okay, literally in that voice right now, you have to make this. Yes. You have to record this and make this.
Are a good driver. Excellent hair today. You have so many friends who love you.
You can show your shoulders in that shirt.
Even as a 44-year-old.
Okay, that's a great note to end on. Michaela, Naomi, and Grace, thank you so much for coming by. Thank you to Alyssa Master Monaco for calling in. There will be more hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support and to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadina Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.